This is Annie F. Downs, and welcome to another episode of the That Sounds Fun podcast. Man, it has been such a fun summer so far for us here at Downs Books. I hope you've had a great summer as well. We are having the best time hanging out in the office with the new interns. They are working so hard. We're getting ready for our Looking for Lovely weekend that's coming up really, really soon. I can't believe it. And when everyone is convening here in Nashville to hang out with us and really just look for lovely all over town, kind of doing my very favorite things. You can learn more about that on our website, anniefdowns.com. If you are interested in attending the Looking for Lovely weekend, there may be a couple of slots left. But we've been planning for that, doing our I Found Lovely every Wednesday on Instagram. I hope you have joined us on that. Check out that hashtag for sure. It has been really, really cool to watch. Today's podcast is two of my very favorite friends. I actually just called the husband, Harris III, one of my favorite entrepreneurs, businessmen, and magicians here in Nashville. And when they showed up at the studio, his wife, Kate, was on the motorcycle too. So you get two for the price of one, or three for the price of two, because I'm there too. I don't know. But there are all three of us on the podcast today. I met Harris and Kate about three-ish years ago at a conference we were both performing at, where I was speaking and he was speaking and doing magic. And I said to them, oh gosh, y'all seem so cool. I wish we got to hang out in real life. And they were like, well, where do you live? And I said, Nashville. And they lived here too. So that worked out beautifully. And we have maintained and continue to be friends. It's one of the best parts, honestly, of my road life and traveling, as much as I get to travel, is making new friends. And when they live in Nashville, it's kind of an extra gift as well. So without any further ado, here is my conversation with Kate and Harris III. Welcome to the That Sounds Fun podcast, you guys.
Thanks.
This is two for the price of one, because I thought it was just going to be you, Harris, and then you roll up on your motorcycle,
yeah,
and you've got your ride or die with you.
I just really wanted to go. I was like, yeah,
okay.
Can I go?
Okay, I don't know if we have time for the story or not, but
oh, yeah.
I've got to tell you, like, first of all, my wife is the reason I have a motorcycle. She bought me an old 1968 vintage cafe racer motorcycle for Christmas.
Oh, it's so cool.
One time. And then what happens is, over the course of the process of me riding the bike, that bike you can't really take a passenger on. And so I end up with a newer bike at some point. And so when I got the second motorcycle, it could easily carry a passenger.
Mm-hmm.
And we're like, let's just go buy a helmet. You don't have to ride all the time, but just for fun. It was our anniversary weekend. She's like, yeah, I'll go for a short ride. A short ride turned into a longer ride, turned into like a whole day ride, which turned into the whole weekend. And now she is obsessed.
I am.
Riding with me on the motorcycle.
I don't ever want to drive. Like, sure. I don't have any desire to drive the motorcycle, but riding it is so much fun.
Why?
Well, I get to hold on to a hot guy. But no, I get to – it's just fun. And there's something very free about it.
Yeah.
It's a little scary. So yeah, it's kind of thrilling.
Free and dangerous.
It kind of feels that, like, 33-year-old thrill. Like, hi, I'm a mom of two, and so this is my thrill.
That's right.
But, no, it's really – it's actually really a lot of fun. It's something that he and I can do together, which is –
And there's no way the kids can go, so that's great.
No way.
No.
Right.
So that actually kind of feels kind of nice, because it's like, well, you can't go.
Right.
So.
Right. So y'all just leave them at home by themselves?
Right. They're fine. Murphy watches them.
Oh, sure. The dog.
We've been married for 11 years, Annie. You got to keep it adventurous.
That's right.
You got to go on an adventure every now and then.
Yeah, I like it.
It was like my midlife crisis.
I was going to say, as we inch closer, at least
third
for me,
crisis.
As long as you like inch closer to 40, you're like, what can I do that makes me not feel old?
Yeah. Are you scared 40 is going to feel old?
I'm afraid 33 feels old.
Oh, okay.
I am 33. But
yeah.
No, I think it's momhood that can kind of do that. But
I don't feel old, and except when I look in the mirror and there are those three lines in the middle of my between my two eyebrows, and I look at that, I'm like, I know my face did not used to have those. Those have not always been there. What do we do about that? This is just like the rest of our lives, isn't it?
I don't know. My hair used to be longer in the back, and every now and then I'd be like, ow, what was that? And she's like, you had a little gray hair in the back. And she just like comes, sneak
like,
up and pluck it out.
So. And now it's like, you'll be bald.
I just start shaving it back there so that doesn't happen anymore.
That's right. The first time I found a gray hair, my friend Jordan, I walked out of the bathroom holding it, and I said, Jordan? And she goes, it is. And I was like, what? I was like, in my late 20s or something, mid-20s. And so then I was like, well, I'm pulling them all out. And then when it got to be where it was like 9 or 10, I was like, I cannot keep living this life. I cannot live the pull-out life, because that will really cause some situations in my head. I'll be bald before I know it.
Right.
That's awesome.
Okay, speaking of feeling old, you woke up at 3 o'clock this morning, Harris?
I did.
Tell me why. I think this is a side of our lives that people don't see.
I just have a lot going on. So I've been trying to be disciplined enough to set an alarm at 3 a.m. every morning and just get up early so I could run a good 6 or 7 miles.
You're
before
such a liar. At first, I thought you were really doing that, and I was like, oh, wow.
No, only reason I get up for 3 a.m. is if a crying child is at my house and I'm actually home and off the road, or if I'm traveling. So unfortunately, you know how this goes. One of those early morning 5 a.m. flights this morning.
Yeah.
It was in West Texas, Midland, Odessa area.
Yeah.
And it was a 5 a.m. flight. So.
Out of where?
Midland, Odessa.
Midland. Oh, that's the airport. Yep. Sorry, I haven't done that one.
That's okay. I was like maybe 30 minutes away from the airport. So got up at 3, was out of the hotel room by 3:30 in my taxi to get to the airport by 4 for my 5 o'clock flight.
Yeah.
And I couldn't fly Delta this time.
Oh, no. The world does not know.
Everyone listening's like, what's the big deal? Why is he so pompous?
It's a huge deal to us. Yeah. We are Delta loyal. I'm Delta loyal because of you as well, you and Carlos.
Once you get your status, it changes everything. I did the math. I had to pay for my bags this trip, which I know everyone listening, they're like, oh, poor you. He has to pay for his bags. But when you travel full time, so I based it on the number of flights I did last year. Not the number of flights, but the number of days, because two flights, you just pay once, right? And it came out to $8,400 worth of baggage fees that I saved just by having status on an airline.
Right.
So all those people that are
typically
like,
overweight.
Yeah, they're like, why are you so picky? You want to fly the same airline. It's this, that. You got to play the game. And when you travel full time, it just saves you.
At the Q conference, they had someone talk on gamification, pretty much how companies have figured out how to teach us to play a game to use their company. And
that
I was like, Delta has got me, because I look at that app and I'm like, right now I am 44 miles from the next level on our little slider. Uh-huh. I'm
Candy
44
Crush.
Miles. I'm like, come on.
It's a game.
I'm like, I need to just fly to Atlanta and back, even though it's beginning, only half the year's gone. I have plenty of time, but it is a game. So you had to fly something else. That's hard for me.
I know.
I had to do it last week. I had to fly something else too, because I went Phoenix to Dallas, and Delta Phoenix Dallas with either Phoenix Salt Lake Dallas or Phoenix Atlanta Dallas, and I was like, okay, I'm taking a direct. I can't. Mm-hmm. I have to be unloyal for a leg. Mm-hmm. But so 3 a.m. So you got, and you flew out at 5, so you got to Nashville at 2 or 1 or something.
Yeah,
10:45.
Like around, landed at
10:45.
Yeah, it was nice.
Got back at 11. Had like a bunch of deadlines I had to meet really quick for conference stuff, and then tried to get all that written up and sent it off. And I laid down in bed at like 1, going, I'm going to take a nap. And the next thing you know, it's like, it is the middle of the day.
You got to get up.
I was
going to
say,
text messages are coming in.
Hey.
She's over there going, you got to watch this video. It's hilarious. And I'm going, I got to get some sleep so I can be on Annie's podcast.
That's
You can tell I don't interact with adults very often.
So that's right, without children. Because if I'm around, I want to be interacting with your children too. I adore them. I did these two events back to back the last couple of weekends, and it was the same crew with both events. Mm-hmm. And afterwards, like towards the end of the second one, I got real, classic Annie, I got real like emotional of like, The summer camp's over. I hate when summer camp's over. And there were two of them that I was like, when we get home, we're going to be real friends. Like, I know we'll be real friends. And one of the girls goes, that never works. And I said, oh, let me tell you this story. I was like, I met this couple in Gatlinburg, Tennessee 3 years ago, and we made a plan, and we decided we were going to be real life friends, and we've done it.
Yeah.
And I'm proud of us.
I still remember that. You're like, you guys are my people. And
yeah.
I'm like, what does that mean? That's like an Annie-ism, right? I'm like, that sounds fun.
That sounds fun. You're weird. But I'm in.
My goal is to squeeze in that sounds fun as often as possible.
Oh, thank
in this
you.
Conversation.
I appreciate that. I wish you would. Okay. So,
which by the way,
yes.
While I was hearing you say that, like that took me back to the old school of touring days.
Uh-huh.
So the difference between like performers, which is what I used to be mostly, and what you are, which is like this traveler, speaker, author. You're used to going to all these different events and there's different people each time. But back in the day, our life was, you're on the road with the same crew and the same performers for like 30 cities. So you spend your entire spring, your entire fall with the same people. And it's hard when you come to the end like that and you're like, this is like, we call it a tour family.
Yep. Yeah.
So you have tour family and then
do
at
you
the end,
like
you have
that better
goodbye.
Or do you like the one-offs?
I like both. They're pros and cons to each, I think. It's really fun to be on the road with an amazing group of people on a tour bus and just develop those relationships and, you know, talk about life at midnight. You know, after the show's over and you're riding down the interstate.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are times where it's like, man, it's kind of nice. I don't miss being on the road 2 weeks at a time, 3 weeks at a time.
Yeah.
I like getting on a plane, flying somewhere, doing something amazing, and then flying back home to my family.
And you almost always travel by yourself now, right?
Yeah, most of the time now.
That work?
I think it's a temporary season. I don't think I'll be traveling by myself very often.
Yeah.
I just ran out of assistants. They all got married or got pregnant. So.
Yeah. So you mostly travel with men, is what you're saying? Married or pregnant? I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's hard. Like because I have a bunch of guys that I could easily travel with. They just, it's kind of weird to be like, here's my lovely assistant.
Yeah.
Carrying a prop on stage.
Okay, so
it's not the same.
That's what we haven't really told the audience yet. My friends who are listening with us is when we met at this event in Gatlinburg. I was speaking, and you were
performing and speaking, kind of. Yeah.
Yeah. And what is your performance art?
The art of illusion.
Yes. I love it so much. It's one of the most interesting things. I always think, I wish I had some illusions or some magic tricks I could do, because I feel like it. What you're able to do is give the audience, give the people watching a visual to take home with what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that and so much more, right? I mean, it puts people in this frame of mind that nothing else can put them in other than wow, and you like start processing things on a deep level, like you're engaged, your mind is engaged, your senses are engaged. And so anything that follows a magic trick, depending on how you transition into it, can be very powerful because of what it was preceded by.
What made you even get into doing magic in the first place?
Not really an appreciation for how awesome the art of magic is. It was kind of an accident. I say accident, but I believe it was obviously purpose-driven. When I was 9 years old, I got a magic kit, like a little box of magic tricks for Christmas from my grandmother. And I still remember that year asking for a baseball glove. I was obsessed with baseball. I had one of those like baseball card collections. I was trading them at school and stuff. And I see this box under the tree at my grandmother's house, which was always the last house we visited because they lived 8 hours away in St. Louis. I see this box, and it's the perfect size for a baseball glove. Open it up. And I'm like, oh, no, magic tricks. This is so stupid. A magician had come to my school when I was a little kid, and I was kind of on the fence about it. I was like, that guy was kind of cool, but this is a little bit cheesy, and I don't really know how I feel about magic tricks. Really wasn't interested at all, honestly. Mm-hmm. And I remember one day learning my very first trick, thinking, this is dumb. This is too simple. Because I saw The Secret before I had ever performed it. And so The Secret to me, once it was revealed to me, seems so obvious. Like I'm reading the instructions going, no one's going to be fooled by this.
Yeah.
So I'm like, let's just give it a shot. And I go perform it for my mom and dad. I was hooked. This is the first time in my entire life at that point that someone had looked at me with this look of awe and amazement in response to something that I had done.
Yeah.
Because I was terrible at everything else. And all of a sudden I had this thing and they were like, whoa. And I was like, what? Was someone just impressed with something that I did? So I think it was that feeling that I latched onto.
Man, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
And you just like rode that puppy all the way through.
Yeah.
That's amazing. It
happened fast. You know, it sounds hard to believe, but, within 2 years, I'd met a mentor and was.
As an 11-year-old?
Yeah. So I was 11. I had my little business cards made up. And
Kate, did you have a mentor at 11? No. No, me neither.
I had it was just a magic mentor, but, you know, I did my first photo shoot and had a tux and like a whole show with music and everything. And people were hiring me around town, $50, $75, birthday parties, it was a small town. So like local businesses would hire me to entertain at the Christmas party for like 20, 30 minutes. And it just started kind of growing from there. And the shortest version of the story is I was going to a camp in Ridgecrest, North Carolina, and I was always on the talent show every year just for fun.
Yeah.
I just went with like the middle schoolers from my church. And one year, the guy that ran the camp was like, you know, Harris, you're getting really good at this. We should have you do an actual show next year at camp. I'm like, that'd be amazing.
Yeah.
I'm like 12, you know, I go back. I go back the next year. I'd given him my business card and everything.
Oh,
and
I
go back
great.
The next year, he's not even there. And I'm like, oh, well, that didn't work out. And a few months after camp, I get this call and he's like, hey, do you remember me? I used to run this camp for Lifeway. And now I'm at this place in South Carolina where I'm helping this guy launch this new ministry called Upward Basketball. And we're
going to
be in 1,000 churches within the next few years. And we basically want to send you out as this example of the type of entertainer that churches should bring in to clearly articulate a message.
Is he talking directly to you or is he talking to your parents?
No, he's talking to me. Yeah.
A 12-year-old.
He calls the house. You know, he calls my parents' house and said, hey, may I please speak to him? And I answer the phone. And he's like, hey. And so obviously I put my parents back on the phone and they played a role in trying to figure out the travel situation. But yeah, at 13, I think it was, I went to Spartanburg and did a show in one of their local churches there. They were testing the program in. And that night went out to dinner with the founder of the ministry and I did a little show in their break room at their offices the next morning, which was like six people. Now they're like hundreds of employees, you know?
Yeah. But,
And I remember Kaz, the president of Upward, sitting down with me and my parents going, you know, if if you guys follow through with this, basically what's going to happen is he's going to end up having to drop out of public school.
Right.
We will buy him a laptop so he can do a homeschooling program on the road because he's going to be pretty busy. So by 14, I was doing maybe 50 shows a year around
and
the
you
country.
Dropped out of school?
Dropped out of public
school. How have we been friends this long and I didn't know you dropped out of school?
Yeah, well, I got a diploma, you know, through a homeschooling program.
But still, you should lead with, I dropped out of high school to be a magician. I mean, that is like, why is that not your Twitter bio?
I don't want to encourage the kids, you know? We called it hotel school instead of homeschool.
Did you really?
So
did your mom or dad go with you?
Yeah. So at first it was both of them. Yeah, it was interesting because, you know, I'm doing so many shows. They're both traveling with me, and eventually, like, they can't take off that many days of work.
Right.
And so they take their vacation and sick days, and they separate them. So one would go with me sometimes, and the other would go with me to stretch those days out. And then my grandparents started traveling with me. True story, hired my grandfather. My grandfather retired from his job early to travel with me full time.
No way. How old were you then?
That was around 15 because I remember not being able to drive, and he was young. So
I had my first employee before I had my driver's license. You're so normal. That's how all of us are.
Yeah. I mean, so I remember 16 performing on a cruise ship for the first time, and it was like gangbusters from there on out. Just traveling
Dude.
Like crazy. Yeah. So many shows.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
Like, what if your son wanted to have an employee at 15? Like, do you feel like when you look at it now, do you think I'm an anomaly or do you think this is an interesting way to grow up? Like, lots of people could do this, or this is a thing that I was specifically built for.
I think it's a little bit of both. I think anybody can do it, but to follow through with it and stick with it takes a pretty special commitment and a willingness to sacrifice things that other kids get to experience, you know? Like, I very specifically remember Friday night was practice night. If I didn't have a show on the road, I had to set up my show in the living room, and my parents would sit on the couch and watch it. And I would do the whole show with the whole script, word for word, same music cues, everything. At the end of the show, my parents would review it and try to talk about what we could change. And then we would preset the whole thing, and I would do the whole show again. So Friday nights, I would literally perform my 30-minute show, 45-minute show.
Twice,
three times, four times, however much time we had. And that was my Friday night. And I remember a lot of times, you know, thinking like, should I be out doing something else right now? Like, should I be out playing or hanging out with my friends? Or, you know, at that time in those younger days, I was still in school. So I remember kids talking about like, hey, we're all having a slumber party at this person's house tonight. You want to come? And it's like, I won't even ask my parents because I already know, like, I've got to go practice my magic show. You know, and that's bittersweet. I certainly am thankful now. I probably won't put that much pressure on my kids, I don't think. But if I had to choose, I think I would make that same choice again. Even though my parents were sort of making that choice for me, I think if they gave me the freedom, I probably would choose that because it changed everything about the trajectory of my life, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Did you love entrepreneurial stuff back then as well?
Oh, gosh, yes.
Okay.
So, I mean,
because that's one of my very favorite things about you. I have a lot of favorite things about being friends with y'all, but one of my favorite things is how entrepreneurial you are and how much you think about business. Has that always been in there?
Yeah, that was kind of instilled in me. I think unintentionally. I don't even think my family knew what they were doing. But I grew up in a very blue-collar family in southeast Tennessee in a really small town. I grew up on farmland. The farm wasn't still functioning, but we still had to bale hay and stuff on the weekends to feed what cows were left. And there was just lots of chores. And so it was hard work. Like, my dad would come into my room as a kid, like third, fourth grade, going, hey, it's 7 a.m. Saturday morning, put your coveralls on, time to go change the oil in the car, help me out around town. I remember getting calls in the middle of the night. The fence was broken, cows were out. All the men in the family, which included me as a little kid, because they were trying to teach me to value that idea of this is what we do as a family. We serve each other. So we'd all go round up cattle and put them back in the fields and repair the fence. And we'd all go back home and get some rest if the sun wasn't up yet. But I remember to get by, there was always these odd things that my family was doing. My grandparents would go to this flea market in Crossville, which was like an hour away on the weekends. And they would go towards closing time and they would go around to people that felt like they were almost running out of stuff and then buy up the entire lot. And we had a yard sale every Saturday if the weather was nice. And so they were basically going up and buying up these other estates, bringing them back, marking it up by 50 cents or a dollar per item and then selling it. And I remember I would always run a lemonade stand at that time.
Oh my God. We sold candy bars at school.
by upselling the price.
The baseball card thing was for me. Like, I had no favorite baseball players. I couldn't tell you their stats. It was if a kid wanted to make a trade at school, they wanted to trade their cards for their favorite player. To me, it was all about looking up how much the card was worth. And if I was trading a card of lesser value for a card that was more valuable, that's all that mattered to me. It was just a business. I remember the last year of school before I dropped out.
I will never forget that, and we'll never call you anything else.
The band was doing a fundraiser, and I was so frustrated because, like, everybody was trying to sell the same thing in this little small town, and I'm like, I got to find a new way to make some more cash. And
what
so,
did you play in the band?
I was a drummer.
I was so going to guess percussionist.
Yeah, so get this. This is going to sound crazy. I didn't know that Sam's Club or Costco was a thing until later in life.
Oh, wow.
I'm like in late middle school, and we end up walking into a Sam's Club in the closest city, again, like an hour away, and I'm walking down this aisle of candy bars and boxes, and I'd never connected the dots. This light bulb goes off like, oh, duh. Like the stores who sell me individual candy bars buy them by the case, and all of a sudden someone's offering to sell them to me by the case. So I basically took some cash and started buying candy, and I had this box of candy, and I was like running a candy store at my school.
Until they made him stop.
My principal shut my candy business down because it was, I kid you not, it was impacting the business of the vending machines at the school.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
We won't talk about the time I lied about my age to get a job in San Diego as a salesperson on the phone for a startup company. I was like, that's another whole long story. We don't have time for that. But that sounds fun, doesn't it?
Yeah.
That sounds fun. Yeah. Don't lie about your age.
Don't lie about your age. And don't drop out of school unless it's to be a magician.
Unless it's to do magic.
And then, yes, you may.
That's... I'm really a good person with integrity.
Oh.
I'm telling all these stories of like, who is this guy?
Oh, every one of my friends who is listening to this is thinking, that guy's a freaking genius. That's what everyone's thinking. And they're like, I wish I was friends with him. And I get to say to you, now you are.
I don't know if it was genius as much as it was like, don't be scared to fail. Just try stuff and like go out and do it. Like, don't be apathetic. There's one thing that did not run in the work ethic in my family, and that was apathy or laziness.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why I grew up almost an alcoholic.
You did.
I've never been an alcoholic. Neither am I an alcoholic right now. A workaholic.
Yeah.
You know, like early in our marriage, going into my early 20s, like hardcore workaholic. And I think that was instilled in me is like, you work hard. That's what it means to be a man. That's what it means to be an American. Mm. You produce and you work hard and you provide for your family.
Yeah.
And then you find it. Any excuse necessary to justify how much time you're spending working.
How did you adjust that for your family?
Oh, gosh. I'm still adjusting it. You know, now I've got two kids now. My oldest is 2.5. So I'm only 2.5 years in of learning how to adjust again and compensate for extra people who want my time and attention. So, it was hard. I mean, it's embarrassing how bad I was at it. You know, first year of marriage. I have specific memories of being upstairs in my office, her yelling, going, hey, dinner's ready. And me being, okay, be right down. And then, like, coming downstairs an hour later to, like, cold food and an empty plate and this look on her face.
I learned just to leave things. It was just like, okay, here, I'll just leave this out for you. Or, hey, it's in the fridge.
So what does that look like, Kate? Because you knew when you married him how hard he worked. I mean, it's an attractive quality.
Right.
Right? Like, he's a hard worker. He's driven. He's... interesting.
It justifies the I'm marrying a magician part.
Right. Hey, it sounded fun to her. So how have you learned that lifestyle and how have you integrated that into who you are?
Oh, gosh. I don't know that I've ever adjusted to it. Mm-hmm. I think 11 years in, I'm still kind of going, hey, like, you got to stop. You got to just turn it off. And I mean, there's still... I think I've learned to just, like, recognize what's really important, what's not important. Social media sometimes is just, it's like, hey, get off your Facebook and come be with us. But if it's like, hey, you got to take a phone call at 10:30 at night, you got to take the phone call. Like, I get that.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know, just adjusting to those things. And I think it's also instilled some drive in me because I did not grow up in that kind of family. I mean, my dad's a CPA. My mom stayed at home. So we just had a very different view on things. It's not that we didn't work hard, it's just it looked different. So it, like, watching him in essence pushes me to go, okay, what could I do more? Like, what am I doing today that I could do better tomorrow?
Or
you know, just things like that. So
that's so interesting.
Yeah.
Something I said to my interns when we started this summer is I was like, I am not afraid. I am far more afraid of your fear than your failure. Like, I do not want your fear to come here. Your failure is welcome here. We're all going to fail. Everybody's going to make mistakes.
Yeah.
But I'm far more afraid that the end of the semester or the end of the summer, you're going to have operated out of fear.
Yeah. I don't – I wish I could understand how I turned out this way of not really being scared of anything. And that – I'm sure to people listening who don't know me, that sounds like I'm, like, maybe posturing or something. But I don't know how else to say it. I'm just really not scared of much. And – I remember I was part of a mastermind one time, you know, just like where a group of creative guys paid a whole bunch of money to all talk to each other once a month, basically, and then keep in touch on a week, or maybe it was a weekly. It was a weekly call. That's what it was. And I remember the guy who was leading the group kept talking over and over and over again and be like, okay, what's it? The focus of the conversations were all about what's the fear, like what fear is standing in the way. And everyone would go through the group and answer. And I felt bad because every single time, like, I'm not scared to try this. Like, let's just go do it. I'm just going to go try it. And they're like, you're not scared at all. And so I don't really know how I'm wired that way, but maybe I need to talk to a therapist and figure it out so that I can duplicate it. Cause it's definitely like you just said, that's how I want to raise my kids. I don't want them to grow up in fear. C.S. Lewis said that fear is a form of worship.
And when
I heard that for the first time, that's when the whole idea of fearing God clicked for me. Cause I was like, oh, well, duh. Like if you're living in fear of something, you're kind of submitting to its power over you, right? So in essence, you're living a life of worship to that thing that you're fearing. And there's a lot of people that are worshiping things that if you ask them, they'd be like, no, I would never worship that, you know? But
you're
they
like,
sure do live in fear. You know,
you
I remember going to Haiti for the first time and being like, let's go like do some magic tricks for like the voodoo priest at the temples and stuff. And they're like, are you crazy? And I'm like, and these are like, you know, missionaries and stuff that are supposed to fear God and God alone. And you could tell they didn't want to do it because they were scared. And when you start to break it down, you're like, what are you scared of? It's like, well, we don't mess around with things like, you know, evil spirits or demons or say whatever. And I'm just like, so you're worshiping Satan right now? You know, that's a little conversation. But,
no, that's interesting.
You know, when you process it that way, it makes you look at fear differently.
Yeah. Okay, so speaking of, you have just kind of jumped into a whole new world professionally. You aren't leaving your old world, but you run the Story Conference.
Yeah.
Which has been like a conference that's existed for 4 or 5 years. How many years?
Yeah.
Since 2009 in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And have you attended before? You've been to Story a bunch, performed, showed up, all the things, and now it's yours.
Yeah, basically.
Right.
So it was founded by my buddy Ben Arment, started in Chicago. And I think back in probably 2014, which is the year that I spoke and performed, I'd started attending a couple years before that. And I remember having conversations with him about he just doesn't really know if he's going to have a 2015 conference.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, why? This is like hugely successful and there's nothing else out there like this. And it basically boiled down to creative ADD. He was ready to move on to his next project.
Sure.
He's a creative and he's driven and he wanted to go write a novel and work on a screenplay and all these things. And he was just kind of done. And I think the tribe sort of rose up and demanded that there be a Story.
Mm-hmm,
and so we had another one in 2015 and same thing happened. You know, he's like, I'm ready to move on. And so, he called me and said, hey, I want you to direct next year's experience and take this thing and run with it. And it's been really cool to honor his vision of what Story is and why he started it to fill that void that existed out there.
What is that void?
Just kind of that tension between spirituality and creativity. And there's a lot of... Actually, there's not a lot of conferences out there specifically about creativity. There's a lot of like Christian churchy conferences, and then there's a lot of like conferences trying to be like TED and have innovative conversations about things. But conversations about spirituality aren't always welcomed at the other place. And then people who aren't plugged into church or like into this whole idea of God and Jesus stuff, like they feel weird at the church when people start worshiping and standing up. And so I think it's a conference that has found a way to balance that really well and respect completely different worldviews while also being very friendly to any kind of spiritual conversations that people want to have.
Yeah.
Because I don't really feel like you can disconnect those two things.
Right.
Your faith and spirituality and your creativity are intertwined.
How does running a conference and continuing to build on what's already been built, but building a conference fit under your skill set? Because I'm a big believer that we kind of have like a main calling in our life that just has a lot of different expressions.
Sure.
How does this fit under the same expression like being a magician.
Yeah. Oh, there's the obvious connections of, you know, I've been a part of some of the biggest conferences in the country as a speaker and performer on stage. And so I've done probably a couple thousand events in my last 15, 20 years of my life. And so you have a lot of experience on one side of the
Do you know how many scene. You've done in your life? I think it'd be fascinating to know how
many you've done. Yeah, it's a little over 2,000.
Wow.
Yeah. And a little over 2 million people.
Oh, my gosh. Fact. Are you joking?
Yeah. 32 countries on 5 continents. Pretty crazy.
Dude.
Yeah.
More than 2 million people you've been in front of?
Yeah. Isn't that crazy? That's
that
live.
Crazy.
That's live. So that doesn't include
TV. So that doesn't even count social media.
So,
Harris,
yeah.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. So there was that obvious thing of, like, being on stage all the time, watching all these conferences behind the scenes going, like, I kind of love to, like, help produce this experience someday. And a few years ago, people started coming up to me all the time. And, you know, you're meeting people at your merch table in the lobby, and you're talking to them about the show. And over and over and over again, Annie, people would say, you know what? Don't get me wrong. Like, I love the magic. Like, I don't know, have no idea how you did that trick where you blah, 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 blah. But my favorite part of your show is when you sat down on a stool and told that story about your grandmother giving you a magic kit for Christmas, or becoming a father and what you learned when you saw that little spark in your son's eyes. You're an amazing storyteller. You're an amazing storyteller. You're an amazing storyteller. So then I thought, okay, let me process that a little bit.
Yeah.
And I had this epiphany. I kind of went back and reviewed my 20-year career performing on stages and realized, oh, my goodness, I got into magic not even because I loved magic, but magic was this natural thing that was being offered to me as a medium, as a
like
channel to tell stories through.
Yeah.
And then if you look at my performance style over the years, all I was doing is just being a storyteller. I just used these different art forms of magic and illusion to communicate these stories through.
Yeah.
And then once I made that realization, I started serving a lot of people in different capacities, helping them produce their conferences behind the scenes, helping produce talks and events. And so now here I am in the director seat. And it's fun because I'm a part of the tribe. You know, I think a lot of conference directors, that's their job. They run a conference serving a certain people who are in a certain vocation, but they don't do that vocation. They're a conference director.
Yeah.
And so what I love about directing story is I am a part of the tribe that I'm serving. I am a creative out there trying to do what I do creatively while also collaborating with a bunch of other creatives to basically produce a conference for our peers. That's really all it is. So it's a blast.
Man, that's really, and it's not in Chicago anymore.
Nope. It's now in Nashville, Tennessee, at least in 2016.
Because we're here.
There's no one knows what the future holds.
That's right.
So yeah, it's here. I always thought Nashville was like this portal city for me. We talked for years about moving to New York or LA. And
No, thank you.
Yeah, here
we're still here.
Here we are.
We're still here.
We kind of
bought a house.
Bought a house.
Yes.
Multiple house. Yeah, multiple.
Oh my gosh.
It sounds like I have
multiple houses.
Multiple houses. No, no, no. I have owned different houses throughout the years. I own one house right now. technically, a mortgage company owns my house.
That's right.
That's
you're
all
owned
I get.
By
your
house currently.
Yes. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, we plant some roots, had some kids, and we're here for the long haul. Nashville's
and you're
just
in
booming
a great
right
church with a great small group that you love.
Yes. Yeah.
Which makes me happy, even though I don't go to your church, because it means you won't leave,
yes.
Which is the goal. I would like for y'all to please remain here so
exactly.
We can keep eating hot dogs together.
I don't,
right,
I don't,
we do.
Even if Story isn't in Nashville every year for its entire future, the Harris family, I think, is in Nashville for the foreseeable future.
Great. The Downs family is as well,
love
as far
it.
As
yes.
I can
love
see.
It.
I don't have anywhere else to go.
Love it.
And by that, I just mean me. My parents are elsewhere. My siblings are elsewhere, but... The Annie Downs, the AnnieFDowns.com.
A godly,
is still
handsome
here.
Man is going to come along
come
and he's going to be like, I am Norwegian. And you'll be like, okay, I'm in.
I'll be like, you guys, I'm so sorry. I'm moving to Norway.
I'm going to reference this podcast.
Oh my gosh, you're going to pull this
that
up.
Time?
Oh my gosh, remember that time? We warned you. It was prophetic.
Yeah.
Okay, what are the dates for Story?
September 29th and 30th.
And
we have it on a Thursday, Friday, so that people
smart.
That are doing things and their jobs involve touring on weekends or doing services on weekends, they can still come hang out.
Where can we get tickets?
Storygathering.com.
Okay.
So Story Conference. Story is doing a lot of cool things right now. We have the conference. We have Story Conference, which is at the end of September. Story Gatherings, which is a local gathering we just started up here in Nashville.
I
we hope
loved
to do
it
in other,
so much.
We hope to do that in other cities in the future. But yeah, right now our hub is just kind of storygathering.com. As we kind of hit the refresh button and
will you talk
out
about
the
gathering that
for...
we had a couple weeks ago? It was so good. Just to say what we did.
Well,
so
what
good.
Did we do? So the local gathering is kind of like a mini story conference experience. It's a local gathering, and we have an innovative talk and an inspiring performance. And so our performance was a brand new band called Bird Talker.
I cannot
quit
them.
They were ridiculous.
They were
they were so good.
I think the biggest challenge with these gatherings, at least in Nashville, is going to be fighting the cynicism among Nashville people because they're all going to come going, we've seen it all, we've been there, done that, you know, and I'm like, you just got to trust me.
Right.
You know, it's going to be an amazing experience. And there were people, a lot of people in the room actually that night that were like, I came because you told me to come, and I was like, great, there's going to be musicians here, as if we need another band.
And then you watch one phone, and then it's five phones,
yeah, next thing
it's
everyone's,
25 phones.
Everyone's phones are out, but they're not checking Twitter. They're
no,
like
they're
recording
or videoing.
It.
Yeah, that's right.
It was amazing. So they blew everyone's mind, and then my buddy CJ did a talk about storytelling, and so that's
and
kind of
our format.
And
it was in an art gallery. Studio.
Art gallery, yeah.
Yeah, which was amazing. I love talking
Ed
to him.
Yeah, Ed Nash is amazing. He's
ridiculous. And just to listen to him... I got to talk to him for probably 20 minutes after the event. And I, like, want to be his best friend forever, which, you know, is, like, classic Annie. But I was like, I just think he's the I think he's the coolest.
He's
so
amazing.
Everybody that was there was super talented. And then y'all invited me and some of my friends as well. And so it was just amazing. But, I mean, really, I can't quit Bird Talker.
Oh, they were ridiculous.
They're going to be everywhere. It's only a matter of time.
Oh, listen, I know. That's why we need to enjoy them now. Because
and the people on this podcast, if you haven't heard of Bird Talker, definitely go check them
friends,
out.
Friends, listen up.
Fantastic.
We'll put a link to them so you'll be able to
really,
find them.
I'm glad to hear you say that. Kate and I have been talking about this. That is a great example of what Story Conference is. Because when you buy tickets and register to come to Story, it's that thing where you're not coming necessarily because you look at the lineup of speakers and you're like, I've heard of all these people and they do amazing things. You probably read the list and you go, wow, that person's going to be there, then that person's going to be there. But the majority of these people, they sound amazing, but I've never seen their work or heard of them. And then you show up at Story and they just blow your mind. And so that's I think one of the most challenging parts of creating that experience is finding the Bird Talkers and finding the Dan Goods of the world, this little company called NASA and JPL, maybe you've heard of him. He's the visual strategist there. And he's doing these crazy art installations around the world about stars for NASA.
Right.
NASA. And so, you know, put him on the website and people are like, didn't know about him or what he was doing, but he's going to blow everybody's minds. So I love that about Story.
How do you find those people?
Lots of research, tons of emails, and tons of collaboration.
Yeah.
Stories has been the most collaborative experience of my life,
yeah,
which is really fun. And you know how this is. Like, is it exhausting sometimes to just feel like you have to shamelessly self-promote?
Oh, listen.
It's like, buy my book, watch my YouTube videos, come to my show, like, please follow me. And you kind of have to do that. It's part of the job of doing what we do.
Yeah.
And we do it because we believe in the message that we're sharing.
That's exactly right.
Like, we believe so highly in our calling that we're willing to say, hey, I'm willing to promote this. Not because it's selfish about me, but like I'm shamelessly promoting what this represents.
Yeah.
And Story's been really refreshing because I get to like surround myself with all these really talented people that are far more creative than I am and then just champion them and serve them and set them up to succeed.
Dude, that's why I started the podcast because all I get to do is bring in my friends and tell all my friends who are listening, listen to how cool these people are.
Oh my gosh, that
you get to meet these
so
people. That are
fun.
I know.
That
I love
fun.
It. Oh my gosh. I don't even hear it as much.
You know, you know the name of your podcast, right?
Yeah. But I'm so interested in being your friend right now that I'm not listening to what you say. Apparently,
I can't stop. I can't not perform. You know,
I appreciate that.
This is my struggle. This is where I need you to hold me more accountable.
No, I'm feeling it. I'm loving every minute of
it. It's one of the things I talk about when I give talks is my vocation as an illusionist cannot be my lifestyle.
Yeah.
Because you put on a show, you walk off stage, the show never ends, and before you know it, you're performing, and it's just hard to turn that off. So
I described it to someone the other day as because the Lord, I mean, we don't have time for this whole story, but when there was a time when I thought I wasn't getting to be an author, and I had to re-explain to everyone in Nashville who I am, and I didn't say I'm an author. I had to say I'm Annie. I moved here from Atlanta. I work here and here. It felt like that sound when you rip raw chicken. You're welcome. It felt like meat ripping from meat when God separated Annie F. Downs from Annie and said, like, you can't be, they aren't the same thing. Right? I mean, I am. I'm always, this is really me.
Yourself.
Y'all know that. But y'all know me in real life and in private life, and it's the same thing.
Sure.
But it is I have to stop performing. Mm-hmm. And I have to have somewhere where I can go like, this is terrible and this is amazing. And I think this is true of us, which is why we stuck together, is I totally don't care what you do. I cheer for you. Like you guys could decide to run a motorcycle company and I will show up and take over and be, y'all are acting so weird about it. And I would show up and cheer for you, right?
I just locked in an investor to open a motorcycle shop.
You are lying.
Don't tell anybody. That's not public yet.
In July.
Oh, that's great. That's great. So I would cheer for you. And if I quit this job and went back to teaching school, you would come to my classroom and do magic tricks.
Totally.
Right? Like,
I would hope Jude would and Everly could be in your classroom.
For sure. I would hope that.
Like, come, I would be like, where's Annie teaching? That's the school we're going to.
Hopefully I could send Jude to do the magic tricks.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Because you got to start employing him quick. He's only got about 6 more years of freedom.
Time's a ticking.
But I think our identities have to be separate from our job in order for friendships like this to work.
Yeah.
Because if we pick friends based on what they do and then they change what they do, that's really challenging. I have friends like that when I taught school that we just didn't last like I would have hoped we'd last because our common bond was what we did.
Well, that and you don't really know people if that's the only reason you hang out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just because he's a magician or you're an author, that's not why I hang out with you guys.
Right.
Like, and that's not really who you are to me.
Right.
So, yeah, it's
our jobs, and we're great at them, and we work hard at them.
Yeah. I remember the very first night we started with the small group that we're in right now, and we were talking about it. I'm like, these people, what do you think? These people don't get me. They don't understand my life. And then, like, you know, a few months in, you're like, what do you think? It's like, my favorite thing is that these people don't understand my life.
Yeah.
You know, like, these are not industry people. These are not, like, ministry people that, like, travel around full time. These aren't conference people or business people or entrepreneurs.
Right.
I mean, some of them are, but, like, we're all in these different lines of work and seasons of life. And I love that about that. Because
I do too.
All of a sudden, I don't have to put on my Harris the Third performer hat and come in and put on a show. It's like I get to walk in and just be me. And
yeah.
They don't just have 1,000 questions about.
You don't have to be the third one.
Exactly.
You can just be the first one. In your small group, I'm just Harris the first.
Harris.
Oh, man. That's...
I hope Jude will be Harris the fourth.
Nope.
That's what. No.
Oh, wow.
Well, that was your call.
That was fast.
That was my.
Yeah, Jude next the fourth. He is not.
Well, no.
I really am a third.
By namesake, he is not a fourth.
Right.
He is just Jude. But his middle name is the same as his first name.
Okay.
Which people think that's like a stage. I really am a third. People are like, oh, you just tag on the third to sound fancy or special or important. Like, I really am a third.
Like, no, I'd have picked the fifth. That's way cooler. I'd have gone Harris the fifth. Well, I didn't have a choice.
The next generation, they don't understand that.
Right.
Like, kids come up and they're like, what's, you're Harris three? And I'm like, three? No, it's a third. It's a Roman, you guys studied Roman numerals in school, right? And they're like, yeah, but in a name? And I'm like,
boy.
Henry VIII? Like, did you not study history class? Like, people actually had, like, that was a thing at one point.
Right, that was the thing.
So, yeah, I don't know.
I had a friend just have a baby, and he named his son directly after him, Junior. And I was like, weird. And I was like, or that's how they've always done it. We just don't do that anymore.
Yeah, I have a friend from my hometown. His nickname is Ivy, but he's a fourth.
Yeah.
And Ivy is from the Roman numerals.
Oh, that's Ivy. Adorable. Oh, I've got to marry a third now. We need to find another third.
It's weird to hear adorable.
He was a Army Ranger.
He's like special ops, borderline Navy SEAL. So.
Oh, is
I don't know if adorable
is fitting.
Adorable. Is he single?
No.
Married.
Okay.
Well,
he's got like
kids.
6 kids.
Oh, good for him. Congratulations. Congratulations to Mrs. Ivy and the 5 tiny Ivies.
Yep.
Congratulations
She's
awesome. To all of them. Okay, Harris, how can people find you online?
Harris the Third. It's just at Harris III on almost everything on Twitter and Instagram.
And Snap.
Snapchat is Harris the Third, like all spelled out.
Yep.
I don't know who the imposter is out there that
so rude.
Got to Snapchat before me, which I feel like I was pretty early adopter. I don't understand why I
missed
that
You really
that
were.
I was late. I was late. But.
Well, and it's not like Harris III is normal. So,
true.
Yeah.
So it's all spelled out, THETHIRD.
Okay.
But HarrisTheThird.com.
You're the reason
my,
I'm on Snapchat, buddy.
Yeah. Really?
The three of us at Bar Taco,
you
guys being like, Annie. Start
to,
because I'd been on for a year just as like the silent observer.
Yeah, you can always see the Annie
silent
watch
observer
this.
Or the
Annie
voyeur.
That's right. Annie doesn't snap, but she watches, and then you're like, get on
and
the horse.
And now you kill it every time I'm like,
I
is
love
Annie
it.
Snapping right now?
You're
I totally love it. I
you
think
spend
it's
more
so
time
fun.
On there than any other social media network.
Unfortunately, maybe right
because
now.
Because it's awesome.
It's fun, and I like making a show.
Yeah.
Like, I like doing a story from start to finish.
And people are engaging with you, and like,
yes.
Yeah, it's more
they like talk back. I love it.
I love it.
Kate, how do people find you online?
Oh,
your blog is so good.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I have a blog, Curious Chase. That's the current blog. Hopefully by the time
com, right?
CuriousChase.com. That's my personal blog. And then hopefully by the time this airs, Baby Steps will be launched.
Yes, so, but it's B-E-B-E.
B-E-B-E.
That's
steps.
The French spelling of baby because that's
fancy.
What cool
baby.
People do.
That's right.
Baby.
Baby Steps. And then depending on the social media site, because I was late to a few of them, Kate Harris, on Snapchat, it's Kate Harris 83 because I was really late.
You're real late.
Yeah, real late.
And then
late.
You're Kate M. Harris somewhere, right?
Kate M. Harris on Instagram.
Oh, there you go.
Which you can also see pictures of my beautiful children.
Yeah, look them up.
They're
actually on Instagram,
too. They have their own Instagram account. It's at Jude and Everly.
Okay. Jude
we'll put
and
all those
Everly.
In the notes.
Yep, spelled out and Everly. Yep.
And follow her. So she's way better at Instagram than I am.
She's great at Instagram.
Awesome.
Will you put on your blog that recipe for that banana, those banana things
those
you just made?
Banana muffins.
Were they so good? They looked awesome.
Okay. I have made gluten-free stuff before or dairy-free things before, and it's always disappointing because you're just like, this tastes gluten-free.
Right.
Which means it tastes like dirt.
Yep, that's it.
And I found this recipe, and it was gluten. It wasn't originally gluten-free. I did it gluten-free.
Oh, okay.
But it's gluten-free, dairy-free, egg-free banana flax muffins, and they were fantastic.
Okay. I need you to give us a link to that so I can share
They're
it.
Magical.
I will.
You loved them.
It's real magic.
Yeah, that's real magic.
Yes. My son, my 2-year-old loved them. That's how you know that something is really good because he eats nothing.
I love recently your attempt to do a standoff with him, and you were like, everybody was like, he'll eventually eat, and you're like, he actually won't.
No, no, no. After 5 days, when he looks at you and says, Mama, I'm so hungry, and you go, well, I'll make you a sandwich. No. Okay. And it's like, all right, well. No. And I love what I love about Facebook and hate about Facebook is that when you post those things, it's very kind of cheeky. I'm kind of poking fun, but everyone has a solution for me.
Oh, sure.
So it's, oh, well, if you did this and if you did this, it's like, I know.
I tried.
Yeah. Thanks,
Tried. Yeah. Yeah. You need to disable comments.
Thanks,
parenting.
Social world.
Yeah. Thanks, everybody. But if you do have an idea to help Kate, just go ahead and let her know.
Yeah.
At Kate Harris. At Kate Harris.
I want all the comments.
I hear what she's saying, but she is very teachable.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow,
she loves to learn.
Yeah,
I do. I'm an information.
She's not
junkie.
A know-it-all. She sounds like she's. You come across a little bit like, oh, this girl knows everything, but that's not her at all.
This is a podcast and not a video.
No, I'm not saying that's how you're coming across right now. I'm saying I don't want people to be like, oh, she already knows everything. She doesn't need any comments, but like,
no.
You're awesome.
I think that's part of the reason I did Curious Chase was just I'm having a conversation. Like, this is what I'm figuring out about life.
Yeah. You're curious.
So, yeah, I'm curious.
Are you chasing it, someone would say?
I might be.
Yeah, there we have it. Well, thank you guys for being on the podcast.
This was fun.
Thanks for letting me be here.
Oh, of course. Well, when you ride the motorcycle in.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm struggling right now. She took like at least a quarter of my time.
What, adding it all up?
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey.
But there's so much more I could have talked about.
Oh,
but we had
fine,
to talk
I'm
about
get my own
muffins.
Talk.
And.
We talked about muffins.
We talked about she Jude told, and Everly.
She told where people can find her online. So much wasted time. Oh, y'all are funny. Thanks for being here. All right, friends, I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Harris III and Kate Harris, his wife. Aren't they just so fun? I totally love them. And all of his That Sounds Fun business, that was hysterical. What a funny guy. So, and I'm really, really excited about the story conference, about him taking it over and what it will become, the beautiful thing that Ben has already built and how Harris adds to that. So, again, that's storygathering.com, and we'll have all the links for you in the show notes and on my blog. So, but I hope you will keep up with Harris and Kate. Again, her blog is curiouschase.com, and he is Harris III. That's Harris III. You can find him all over Twitter, Instagram, all the places, including Snapchat, Harris III, as he spelled it out for you. Y'all know I am loving Snapchat these days. I'm Annie F. Downs there. Actually, anywhere you want to find me, I'm Annie F. Downs. F as in fancy. Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. My website, AnnieFDowns.com, and Snapchat are all Annie F. Downs. I would love to hear from you. Who else do you want to hear on the podcast? What are you loving? What do you wish I'd do different? I don't know, but I'm open to hearing your suggestions and would actually love them. I love doing this so much. I want to make sure that we are doing what my friends out there want to hear. So who do you suggest? Just let me know. Also, if you don't mind, when you pop over to iTunes, you can download some of our old episodes. If this is your first time around here, or if you haven't heard some of the old stuff, head on back there. We have some great episodes with Dave Barnes, Matt Wirtz, Angie Smith, Jessica Turner. There's an episode where I got to read an entire chapter of my most recently released book, Looking for Lovely. So I would love for you to check those out. And if you don't mind, when you go back that way, leave a review. There are so many people who pass by this podcast and aren't sure whether it's a good fit for them, and reviews are how they help see and decide that, right? How they decide if they're welcome here, and they are. So I hope you are having a great summer, and I hope you go out and do something that sounds fun to you today, and we will see you next time.